It's Football Friday, brought to you by Video Only, getting you ready for the football weekend.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague with Andy Dirt Johnson.
That's my guy!
And Brandon Sprague.
This team fights!
Football Friday on the Fan is brought to you by Video Only. If you don't, you'll be sorry on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here, 105.1 The Fan. And the Fan Sports Network, good morning. Happy Football Friday, everybody. Quick update for you. The U.S. women's team just boat raced China in the basketball FIBAs.
Suck it, China.
Nice little game.
FIBA Women's World Cup.
Dude, we need to draft that Chinese big gal number one overall pick.
They have two, so which one? The backup or the starter?
I want the backup.
The starter looks a little more flexible.
I mean, that's all right. This one, Azu Zhang, I think is how you, I don't know if that's how you
She's
pronounce
massive.
It. She is 7'3".
Yeah.
She's the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So I went and looked at a mock draft. I thought her name was at the top of that. I can't see it anywhere.
How is somebody not going to jump on that in the first round?
Because she can play 3-minute intervals and
that's
then
all
she's
right.
Tired.
Hockey shifts. Let's go. On and off. On and off. On and off. Who's the tallest player in the WNBA right now? Is it still Brittany Griner or somebody taller than her?
No, it's probably UCLA or
Lauren Betts
or God South
Cardoso.
It's got to be one of them, I would think.
They're around 6'7", 6'8".
Seattle Storm have a 7-foot gal.
Let's see.
I believe
they have a 7-footer.
I think so. Or she's like 6'11".
There's a 6'11" gal for the New York Liberty.
Okay,
Hanju.
Okay,
Bernadette Hatar. This says she's 6'10". Then Brittany Griner 6'9". That's according. According to Google AI.
I thought Seattle had drafted a almost 7-footer.
Maybe they did, but I was in awe of that. She was all of 7'3" and just dominating the paint.
I don't know about dominating. They lost by 30.
Look, she doesn't move very well. Okay, yeah. Give her Caitlin Clark knocking down threes. Maybe they win.
Give me Hannah Hidalgo or Juju Watkins, yeah, please.
That's what you
please,
want.
Can we do that?
Second round pick. How about that? Second round pick.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Loaded second hour. We'll get to the number one team in the dirty pool, but let's open up Cafe de Dirt and Sprague.
I'm hungry today.
Yeah?
Yeah, I could use a burrito.
If you could eat a burrito, if that would be
I would
a
eat a burrito right now, yeah.
Standard. What's in it?
Easy, simple, cheese, potato, sausage, probably some bacon, too.
That's it, huh?
That's all
no,
I need.
No, I can't get some onions or peppers in there?
No, we don't need veggies.
I mean, it's not like it. Does it really add anything to
no,
it,
way,
to be fair?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it does?
Really?
Yeah.
I think I disagree with that take. Wouldn't be the first food take of yours I disagreed with.
No.
All right, well, it's Celebrity Week. I'll just go with the Andy Johnson.
Hey, I like that.
There you go.
The
call
dirt
it that.
Special.
Give me. It's got to be big, though. It's got to be a two-hand burrito. Can't handle it with one. I don't want a one-hand burrito. I want a two-hand burrito.
You want something that, like, kind of falls apart as you're eating it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dripping out of the bottom.
I don't know. I got bombarded with the chicken and waffle sandwich, breakfast sandwich from Chick-fil-A, all seeming that commercial was coming on my TV.
That's what's on top of the mind right now?
All during football.
By the way, in the nobody's giving us a chance rat poison department, did you happen to see during one of the, maybe it was Georgia Tech, Colorado?
Mm-hmm.
We had a Oregon Modelo commercial.
Dude, that's actually pretty badass.
I missed that.
I've seen that a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Just all
it's a
Oregon
daughter
fans.
Texting her dad about, like, you know.
She's at a
it's
duck
about
game.
Diehard fans. Yeah. She's single a duck. She never gets to watch games with her dad, so they text each other. And
he
then at the end,
up.
He shows up at the bar.
And they both say, go Ducks.
Go Ducks. At least it's not a SCO. That would have hurt me. If it was a SCO in that commercial, that would have. Ow, a dagger.
All right. Let's open up the cafe and start here.
Oh, this one is drilled by Rutschman. His second home run tonight. Welcome back to Baltimore, Adley Rutschman.
Yeah, that one was Kenny Albert and Fox. I saw a little bit of this one. Rutschman with two home runs in his return. Got a standing ovation in his first at-bat. Goes yard.
Boo.
Came back later. The O's were winning the game. Boston came back. And Rutschman had two home runs in his return as the former number one pick.
Got to be one of the coolest feelings out there.
Has to be.
Hitting you, like getting to your old team. They traded you away. Now that there's a ton of animosity, you probably get it. You're in a fine spot. You're in Boston. But still, going home, you traded me away. Here, eat these two home runs.
Order up. Here is Caden Hauser. We'll see how long he can throw it here. He's standing at the 40. He's got all day. Now he heaves it deep to the south end zone. Ball up for grabs. And it is juggled around. Is it caught? It is!
Brian Barnhart, Learfield, Illinois. Illinois in a bit of a dogfight in that first half against UAB.
Yes, they were.
And they ended up getting a Hail Mary touchdown that might have been dropped by three UAB defenders and then eventually was just grabbed by an Illinois wide receiver.
It's another reminder of how you always have to rush the passer on a Hail Mary. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback.
They rushed one guy.
Like, he's just literally standing there, bouncing. He takes, like five crow hops to get into that throw. You got to put pressure on the quarterback, rule number one. Also, for those who didn't watch the game last night, do not look at the final score and think to yourself, wow, okay, Illinois scored 42.
They were struggling.
Dude, that was one of them is a Hail Mary, and then they scored 14 garbage time points in the fourth. That was an uncomfortable game until late. And so Illinois was another team. It was a rough night for the Big Ten last night.
What if they would have lost to UAB the same night Rutgers lost to UMass?
Kick them both out of the conference. Get them out of here. Illinois, really? Dude, yeah. Dude, come on. Juice Williams going to walk through that door? He ain't playing here anymore.
Well, the good part is that our players have, that's when we practice in the morning. So at 9 a.m., a 9 a.m. Pacific time kick is when we would be starting our practices normally. So that piece is a little bit helpful. So, guys, we don't put too much stock into external factors. We just focus on, hey, doing your job each and every play. And whether that job needs to be done at 9 a.m. or 10 p.m., you got a job to do. And so just like your mother gets up and has to go to a job at 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock, dad has to go work the graveyard shift as well. They don't get the opportunity to all of a sudden not do their job well and not put food on the table for you. Guys, whatever time I kick that ball off, you better be ready to go. And so that's the message to our football team.
There's Jamarcus Shepherd on our show yesterday. If you missed that interview, he was fun to talk with at 105.1 The Fan. About the early kick tomorrow, 9 a.m. kick for Oregon State here locally over in Houston. They start practice at 9, so it shouldn't feel any different for their body clocks.
No, it should be normal. When you're a morning practice team, that certainly helps when you got to go have those early kickoffs. And I hope, look, not that one equals the other or because one team did it, you'll do it, but I hope watching a UMass-Rutgers game last night, now Rutgers blows, Houston's better than them, but you should be better than UMass. I would get UMass hasn't won a game against an FBS team in 3 years. Like, it just shows that you have no clue, man. You put the right collection of players together, a little bit of a change in staff, you get a quarterback that can make some plays. Next thing you know, you find yourself in a ball game, and I hope that happens tomorrow for OSU.
We'll have more on this. A couple other Shepherd cuts we'll bring back, and then Willie Fritz talked about taking on Oregon State, who they almost lost to last year in Corvallis, as they look to finish off the home-and-home exchange starting tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely different. But, yeah, you guys know I'm optimistic going into every season kind of with that mindset. And, yeah, it's an NFL season, you know, positive vibes and good energy doesn't win you games, you know. So understanding that, yeah, we've put ourselves in a great position. We've put ourselves in right where we need to be to go and give ourselves the best chance to have a great week of practice and win week one up there in New York. And so right now, the energy is everything's great, but we got to make sure we're doing everything to be accountable to each other and just continue on that trajectory. But we've got to go do it. We've got to go win games, and we've got to do everything necessary to make sure that we put ourselves in that best position come next Sunday.
There is Dirt's quarterback Dak Prescott of the Dallas Cowboys. Says this year he's always optimistic. This year feels different than last year. I saw an interesting note on this. If Dak Prescott, so he's been in a couple games and had to leave with injury.
Yeah.
When he plays a full game, the Giants have not beaten Dak Prescott since 2016.
That's pretty wild. That's a long time ago. When did he start as a starter in the NFL?
I think like 20...
Right before that?
It would have been the first year.
Here we go!
2014? 2015?
When was his first year?
Because remember, Mississippi State was in the first college football playoff rankings.
That might have been
four.
Like his second year in the NFL then, yeah, because 2014 would have been that last year for Dak at Mississippi State. 2016 is his first year in the NFL.
Wow.
So he's never lost to the Giants or hasn't since his rookie season.
Yeah.
And when he finishes the game, like obviously there's games that you point out that he's gotten hurt
in. I want to make sure I have that. I was like, what?
Giants haven't necessarily been great in that time frame, right? Like that's after their second Super Bowl, and that was the end of Coughlin and the end of Eli and then the transition period, Danny Dimes and everything that transpired there. I'm certainly high on the Cowboys this year. Dak Prescott is part of that. He's put up good numbers seemingly every year that he's been healthy in the league. It's primarily because I love what they did on defense. I think they're going to be serviceable on that side of the ball. And as long as you have that to go with what they have on offense, they have a chance to be special this year.
Order up. Behind closed doors, you say whatever you have to say. But when the league is public facing, it is a unified front. it's why it was important for the league last week when they put out that vote for it to be unanimous. For this to be playing out so publicly, I'm sure infuriates Greg Sankey because he does not. I don't mean to go on a tangent, but just this year, in, a few weeks ago in Tampa at SEC Media Days, there was a talk about self-governance. And from during his State of the Conference address, Greg Sankey sort of admonished Georgia for publicly talking about self-governance. I mean, it is very important that they appear unified, and this is clearly the opposite when you have the league suing a member institution.
Yeah, there is Matt Moscana, our good friend down in Baton Rouge, who's getting a lot of media attention because LSU is constantly in the headlines. I just saw that judge picture, by the way. That is hilarious. He is sitting with his robe on, putting up the L with one of the LSU coaches as they ruled Daquan Wright and Xavier Harris will be eligible to play. Now, the SEC's filing a federal lawsuit. I'll get to that in just a second, but that was Matt Moscana. And by the way, it's 14-game winning streak Dak has over the Giants.
Well, I'll tell you right now, here's a peekaboo for next Friday. I'm springing the line on the Cowboys Sunday Night Football Week 1.
By the way, you like the Giants?
I like them both. Okay, I can like both. Right. They have to play each other. There's got to be a winner. There's got to be a loser.
Okay.
This question comes down to, we just had this in the NBA. Adam Silver, how big are your balls? Then we found out, guy's got pretty big balls. Greg Sankey, how big are your balls? How far are you willing to take this?
Swag, does it make you nervous that Pablo Torre is now investigating Mark Walter and the
Dodgers?
I'd
be pooping my pants if I were a Dodger
fan. He already
fan
found
right
out
now.
That Mark Walter basically gifted Magic Johnson an insurance company to make him a billionaire.
Yep. Nothing to see
that
here.
That took all of, what, 2 days?
Nothing to see here.
Well, better win this year.
It might be the end. The 3 weeks, the end.
Order up!
A 45-yard attempt with 3 seconds remaining. He makes it. They win. He misses. The Buffs win. Snap put down, kick is up, and it got blocked! And the game is over!
Who Carter?
And Colorado wins at Bobby Todd! Boo Carter blocked a field goal! How about the start to 2026 and Prime's return to Atlanta?
There's Mark Johnson, Learfield Buffs Radio, good friend of the program, on that final blocked kick. College is just... anything beyond 20 yards to me,
nothing's a guarantee.
I never feel great about a kick. I'm always nervous it's going to get blocked or they're going to absolutely shank it with the pressure.
Yeah.
I wasn't really surprised to see it get blocked the way that it did.
It's funny. That's one of the biggest differences, I feel like, between college football and the NFL. The NFL has gotten to the point where those guys are so automatic and so good that they're hitting like 58-yarders like a breeze. And in college, like somebody texted in earlier that it looked like the Georgia Tech kicker was going to crap his pants, and it definitely felt like that.
But he had hit big game-winning kicks.
Dude, he hit a 50-plus yard game winner against Clemson last year. Like, that guy's had moments, and it just, you never know what's going to change. He missed one early in the game, and then at the end of the game, it gets blocked. Sloppy game, summed up on that last play.
Very few people until last night expected Greg Sankey to even be here today. There had been talk out of the SEC that was very unlikely all week. Not only did Greg Sankey appear, but basically at the same time he appeared in their own backyard, the SEC's based in Birmingham, they filed federally, trumping this moment in a significant way. You know, it's unknown how this federal lawsuit is going to play out, but if it plays out anything like the Big 12 one, which this is clearly cribbed from the playbook, we could get a ruling soon, and LSU would face long odds.
There is Pete Thamel summing up the SEC's federal lawsuit. They lost the ruling in Baton Rouge for the players' eligibility, but as a conference, they have filed a federal lawsuit against LSU to prohibit these players from playing.
It's just, I'm so tired of it, dude. I one of the things I was most excited about with football kicking off was all of this nonsense would go kind of to the back burner and like, all right, we'll talk about this again in January or February, and here we are. Games last night, games tonight, games tomorrow, and it's the dominating topic right now in college football.
Order up! So I would say we're a little behind as far as preparation of the opponent. Because we've put just a whole bunch of focus on us. But I think playing out our rules and not so much diving so deep into game planning when you know, who knows what you're going to actually get, right? We might line up, you know, Saturday and see wing T. We don't know. You know, there's no prior film of this new era of opponent number one. So we go off of what we do know.
Yeah, this quote is being circulated and it's being kind of cut up. To be fair, Swag wanted to give more context. That's former Oregon D.C. Taj Lupoy, who's getting ready to make his debut as the Cal head coach. I think this is going to be – my take is it's going to end up being the best game of the weekend. Now, I don't know where that will register for people. It's a Pac-12 after dark game for the Big Ten and the ACC. in the UC system of the state of California. But what I would add to this is the end there. So I, whatever, you're doing your prep and all that, like you're a little behind. Okay. We don't know what to prepare for. This is the first game. He literally played against him at James Madison in Oregon last year. It's kind of insane that you don't know. Just turn on the film.
You should have a general idea.
Their system's not – they're not going to go completely different.
He might be being a little coy, too. But basically, the premise was he took the training camp a few more extra days. Obviously, new head coach, so many transfers, trying to implement their system and their stuff. And so because they took it maybe – a few days longer than most other teams did when they started regular game prep week.
Yeah.
He admitted, we're not a little, we're a little behind of what we would normally do, but also there's a big wild card factor in new coach, new system, whatever.
Yeah, the point on him coaching against him in the playoff is a good one. Like, they just saw him. Did he bring both his coordinators with him from James Madison? I don't know that off the top of my head. If he did, that makes the answer a little bit worse, because then it's...
Well, isn't he a play caller himself?
I believe is a play caller himself.
The coordinators became the head coach.
So maybe there's part of that, of like, there is a new coordinator. I do appreciate, though, the general honesty of, like, what do you game plan for week one? What's the team going to, like, there's an aspect of that I do appreciate, but also maybe don't say that going into your first game of, like, we're running a little bit behind on prep time.
Let me ask you guys quickly. I got one more cut for the cafe. Do you have what you think will be the best game of the weekend? Like, just, like, from an entertainment, it's going to actually be a good game.
I am all in, and I hope this is not wishful thinking, because I'm a little worried that it is. There's just something about that LSU-Clemson game for me. Like, nobody's really given Dabo a shot. It's prime time. This idea that you can't win at LSU at night. Remember what Alabama did to him 2 years ago, and they scurried like rats out of that stadium in the second quarter, down by 40 points? All the pressure, all the distractions, all the noise. They come out, throw a pick on their opening drive. The nervous energy kicks in. I got a feeling that one's going to be funky and come down to the wire.
So you think the primetime game of the weekend is going to live up to it?
I do think it will.
I love it. All right, last one here in the Cafe de Dirt and Sprague.
Order up!
I don't want to pick Oregon because it's Oregon, and they usually come up short. But I'm such a supporter of Dante Moore that I want to pick Oregon. He is, to me, exactly what you're looking for as a quarterback. I think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. Look schedule-wise, I feel like they have a pretty good run of the schedule. I think once they get in, they're a hard team to get used to. You know, Indiana had their number. Beat them in the regular season. Destroyed them in the playoff last year. Besides that, Oregon looked great all season. So I'm going to take Oregon, but my second pick would be Ohio State. I think the two best teams will, once again, just like last year, the two best teams are in the Big Ten.
There we go. Matt Jones of Matt and Myron.
Add another one in the mix.
ESPN Radio, he is taking your Oregon Ducks to win the national championship. It's too bad nobody's giving them a chance, though.
If only we were going into the year with any sort of hype and expectation. You know, a little bit of pressure would be nice. Pressure makes diamonds. That's what they tell me. Pressure's
is that what they say?
Pressure's a privilege.
What happens when you get pressure in a semifinal game against Indiana?
As long as it's not a rematch, I'll feel okay. We don't have to play them in the regular season.
You play Ohio State, though. What if it's Ohio State?
We got to play them twice. I'm going to be a little nervous round two, even if we win game one.
I don't know who wins November 7th, but it would be hilarious if, for the third straight year in the playoff, you play a team you already played, because...
I don't know if hilarious would be the word that I would use, but I understand why you want to use it.
Well, everybody would enjoy it, because they'd be like, dude, there's not going to be one Duck fan that's like, I'm not worried.
Yeah, it would be like, the only thing you're thinking about the entire... If it's like, imagine if it's the long layoff, too.
Oh,
like, you got the
30-day
layoff, and all that's hanging over your head is a rematch against Ohio State.
Brutal.
Again. A team that you beat in the regular season and now got to go play again.
We've got more we need to get to today. That's Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague. We do it every day at 7 a.m. Coming up next, our last stop of the Dirty Poll. The number one team in all the land, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson. We'll get to that coming up next, and we'll get into some NFL today. A lot of news and notes to discuss, but coming up is the Dirty Poll. Number one team. We'll find out who it is on The Fan. All right, we roll on here on a Football Friday. Welcome in. Good morning. Hope you guys enjoyed your Thursday night football. We've got Friday night football, including Mario Cristobal.
Two little interesting games today, I'd say.
We've got a great slate for Saturday football. We'll have OSU kicking off at 9 and then 8 a.m. tomorrow. Andy Dirt Johnson will be hosting the pregame show.
Hello.
Because Oregon takes on Boise State.
Yes, they do.
Looking forward to that one. And then we've got Sunday football as well with The number one team in all of the land, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, Wisconsin.
It's not Wisconsin.
No. Well, I was going to tee up the game.
Sorry.
Jump in there and interrupt me.
I don't want people to get confused on the dirty pool here, okay?
No, it's not Wisconsin. Wisconsin's taking on the number one team in all the land, according to you.
There it is.
And that is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, that game at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Our good friend Tim O'Malley of Irish Illustrated hopping on as Notre Dame is number one in your preseason top 12 dirt.
Yes, they are.
Tim, good morning. My co-host has given you the kiss of death because he can't do it to his alma mater, Oregon. He's got Notre Dame preseason number one. What do you think?
You know, I might have done the same thing because I have Ohio State preseason number one and my alma mater, Notre Dame, number two. So I guess we think great minds think alike.
Smart man, dude. Nobody wants to put that on their own team at the start of the year. That's how we got to roll. The biggest question I have, to be honest, like I look at the line of scrimmage play. They got a transfer from Oregon on the defensive line. I know that to add some depth. The offensive line is supposed to be awesome. You have a returning quarterback. Not often you see college programs put two running backs into the first round of the NFL draft in the same year. And that was such a big part and heavy part of their offense last year. Where are they at running back, and how do they feel about their ability to replace those two studs?
Yeah, you know, it's actually never happened.
There you go.
Yeah, and when you think about it, it wouldn't have back in the past because there's always one running back. But replacing them is Aeneas Williams, and he only played garbage time last year, and because of that, we thought he might transfer. As a true freshman in 2024, he actually played plenty behind Love and Price, but they changed running backs coaches. Jawan Sider came in from Penn State, where he had Singleton and Allen. He basically told the media, "I played two backs." We didn't believe him, but boy, was he serious. And he did have two good ones in Love and Price. So there's not a whole lot you could argue with that employment. But Williams was pretty important in the playoff run in 2024. Actually, he sparked them against Penn State and Jawan Sider. So I think you'll see a 1,100, 1,200 aggregate yards from scrimmage. He's a good receiver. He's a little like Kyren Williams, the way he's built and his skill set. I think Kyren Williams, of course, his kind of his approach to football is what took him over the top for Notre Dame and now the Rams. But he's a really good runner. The backups, fans love them. Coaches like them. And I think the two best backups are probably freshmen that will lead Notre Dame next year. So it's going to be interesting to see Nolan James and Keetern Young, Aeneas Williams' backups this year, how they kind of handle the load.
Yeah, they're absolutely loaded on offense and defense, Tim. And I'm just curious because the odds in Vegas say C.J. Carr is the favorite to win the Heisman. And yet I feel like when the conversations are being had about quarterbacks, certainly the Vegas odd makers think he is number one and he's in that running. But it feels like a lot of the noise is around other guys. You know, Dante Moore gets a lot of conversation because he chose to come back. You get Arch Manning, I guess, surged at the end of last year, and so he's back again, and it's the famous last name. I'm curious what you've heard about C.J. Carr at a camp this summer and just your overall thoughts of him being a Vegas number one while still kind of weirdly flying a little under the radar in the conversation from the media perspective.
Well, I think Dante Moore and Arch Manning both have harder schedules where they can have more Heisman moments. C.J. Carr almost needs one against Miami. Now, that puts a Notre Dame fan in angst because you don't want Miami to come in and challenge Notre Dame. Obviously, there's a lot of bloodlust going there. But yeah. I feel like Moore, I mean, Julian Sain even, although he has the best wide receiver in the world on his team, so that's part of it. Arch Manning, they're going to have more opportunities to impress voters because you know Heisman voters aren't necessarily the most discerning people in terms of all of what's going on in college football. So I wouldn't put Carr's – I know his odds are there. I don't think he'll win it. I don't think that would be a great bet. But if he leads them to 12-0, Notre Dame fans won't care if he wins the Heisman or not. In fact, they like to think everyone's against them anyway. So I think they'll be pretty happy if that happens. But he doesn't have as many Heisman moment opportunities as those guys do. Their schedule just trended down so much this year that – I guess if he brings them back at BYU and throws the game-winning touchdown against Miami and has great stats, that he could be at the top of the heap. But it's just stiff competition with quarterbacks this year. And honestly, Jeremiah Smith's probably the best player in the country anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned kind of Notre Dame fan and going through the chatter. Right? They're used to it, right? The whole, like, join a conference thing. I'm sure that's, you know, a tired debate that you have to have every single year. Now we're going into this season, and a lot of the focus and attention is on Notre Dame's schedule, which on one hand, I certainly get. It's not the hardest in the world. Part of that is USC and them, you know, not agreeing to continue the rivalry, and that hurts it. But I also just chuckle at the notion, like, you mentioned Miami there. And this is preseason rankings. Miami only plays one preseason preseason ranked team in the top 25. Notre Dame's got three, and I don't hear anybody being like, "Hey, Miami shouldn't go to the playoff this year because their schedule sucks." Where is the Notre Dame fan base on that debate? Because they do seem to be the focal point of it every year.
Yeah, Miami plays at Clemson, and they'll either be ranked or not at all after this weekend versus LSU. And Miami's schedule is worse than Notre Dame's. They do have to go to Notre Dame, so I mean that would be obviously the number one signature win. Unless Ohio State goes and wins at Texas. So,
right. You
know, what really hurt Notre Dame was if you just looked at the schedule 6 years ago and you saw an 8-win program in Wisconsin, an 8-win program in North Carolina, a 7-win program in Michigan State. Gosh, even I know Stanford's been down for a while now, but even what Stanford used to be, a 7-8 win program, it wouldn't look as bad. But those are all 4-win programs, 3-win programs right now, and it just really trended poorly. In fact, the ACC matchups, the five of them, they're fortunate they got Miami and SMU because otherwise they got the absolute bottom dwellers of the ACC from last year, and that's just a rotation. You know, it's difficult when it works that way. USC dropping out hurt a lot. And this would really help if Notre Dame just had one of those other games, because in the next few years they have home and home with Texas, they have home and home with Alabama, they have home and home with Auburn. You just needed one of them this year. And no matter what Auburn is, it just sounds better if Auburn's playing Notre Dame than if North Carolina's playing Notre Dame.
Yeah. Tim O'Malley, our guest here, Irish Illustrated, as Notre Dame is number one, according to Dirt, on the preseason top 12 Dirty Poll rankings, college football kicking off. Obviously last week, but really for most programs, it is this week and this weekend. What is the weakness of the team? They're so loaded. I had a hard time, and you cover it. What is what you would say is, maybe not a weakness per se, but the weaker part of the team that you have the biggest questions about going into game one?
Yeah, for these top seven teams, Miami, IU, Oregon, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Texas, hopefully I didn't bring anybody there, but the top seven are obvious. It's nitpicking time, right? This is the time of year where you try to figure out why they might not make the playoff. And it's not on defense for Notre Dame. You cannot find a nit to pick on the defense. Offensively, you probably could anywhere except for C.J. Carr. Right now, the offensive line is missing some key components. Now, Charles Jagusa is the best player on the line, but he hasn't played since the championship game. So they are well prepared not to have him. But if you look at, like, national magazines, Phil Steele, Athlon's, Lindy's, they all have Jagusa as part of the starting lineup. He is still rehabbing from a UTV accident from July 5th, 2025.
Wow.
So they haven't been counting on him. The guy that was going to win one of the starting jobs, redshirt freshman Matty Augustine, broke a bone in his foot, so he won't be in there. And then what happens is they return four starters, but one of them is coming off a torn ACL, and the other three have shifted positions. So if you're looking for an early season weakness, maybe the offensive line isn't as cohesive as it should be. It's not, I like to call it right now, a playoff line, not a championship line. They can get to the championship line, though, getting some people back. Ashton Craig, their starting center, is a sixth-year guy. That won't happen anymore. He tore his ACL 2 years in a row. He is listed on the depth chart, and they returned the backup center from last year, so they have some depth. They recruit great on the offensive line. This is one of those first-world problems people shouldn't complain about too much, but when you're nitpicking,
right.
I could see Notre Dame's offensive line not having a great day against Wisconsin. The key is, C.J. Carr is, I don't know how to describe him other than he is one of the smarter players in football pre-snap and diagnosis. There's been some fantastic articles written about him and what a football junkie he is. It's almost in the Peyton Manning vein where he is in there before all the coordinators. He is no longer studying Notre Dame's offense. He is just studying defense. And he's beyond studying the defenses they're playing. He's studying defensive tendencies so he can understand what he might see. It's that high level. And they really need him, because I did forget one weakness. His backup, no matter who it is never taken a college snap. You have a true freshman and a reclassified true freshman in Teddy Gerard, who should be a high school senior right now. So if he gets hurt, there's your weakness.
I would say how many programs, though, Tim, in college, if they lose their starting quarterback, it's going to be like, well, I don't know if this guy's ready to go.
Not everybody could have Timu Mahomes as their backup quarterback. Thank you very much. I'm curious, like, to zoom out for a moment. By the way, I'm totally going to steal that playoff line, not a championship line, because that kind of makes me feel like that's how Oregon's been the last couple of years, really good. And when they need them to be really good, are they really good? Zooming out a little bit, I just find the conversation around Notre Dame interesting in terms of, they've had really good runs, right? They've been to a national championship game. Brian Kelly took them to a playoff again. But I feel like from the outside looking in, I never really took them seriously as a threat to win the title. It's like, that's kind of a fun story. Notre Dame's back, but they're not going to beat fill-in-the-blank great team. And Kelly, I would imagine part of the reason he left is because he probably thought the same, right? I have a better pathway to win a championship elsewhere. And then Marcus Freeman immediately gets you to a national championship game, and they're going in with as good as odds as anybody to win the title. And I don't laugh at the notion anymore of Notre Dame being able to win a championship. Like, what is the biggest change? Is it an NIL change? Is it a Freeman's just a better recruiter? Like, what has been the biggest difference, I guess, in the Marcus Freeman era from where they were at the end of Brian Kelly?
Yeah, he's a much better recruiter than Brian Kelly, but let's chicken or the egg. I mean, the NIL is insane now at Notre Dame. They used to be nothing. They wouldn't even discuss it in 2022. Marcus Freeman's first year, Michael Mayer, who obviously had a good NIL check, he wouldn't even offer what it comes from. And they're still really hesitant about it, but we know they're in the high 40 million range. For a fact, they would dispute that and say they're in the low 40 million range, but who cares? It's $40 million. So, you know what? You can dispute that all you want. We also can add, but, NIL is part of it. People want to play for Freeman. He has more five stars coming in than Brian Kelly ever had in his 11 years. The transfer portal, they do a good job of bringing in 7, 8, 9 guys. It's kind of like the Ohio State model. Their NIL money goes to retention, and now it's going to recruiting because they're going to have a great class coming in along the defensive line. But, yeah, people want to play for Freeman. To be fair to Kelly, he had no shot of beating Clemson in 18, Alabama in 20, and Alabama in 12.
Right.
But this Notre Dame team could have won the national title. They did draw Ohio State, which was, as Oregon fans found out, actually the best team that whole year, even though they were the 6th seed. That's a rough draw. Notre Dame always says if they just could have gotten Texas. Not Notre Dame, Notre Dame fans. Just get someone like Texas that doesn't have Jeremiah Smith. They probably could have pulled that out. But. Yeah. Yeah, they are if they're in the playoffs, I mean, they're as big of a threat to win it as anyone. We thought they would win it last year had they gotten in. After watching IU, I no longer think that. I think IU is the best team, and they would have beaten Notre Dame as well. But, I mean, Notre Dame would have absolutely bundled Alabama and Oklahoma, who got in ahead of them. The astute Notre Dame fan does not blame Miami. They just hate Miami. They know Notre Dame and Miami belonged in, and Alabama and Oklahoma absolutely did not.
Tim, I know my co-host has Notre Dame number one, but I guess I got to ask, like, what is categorized as a disappointing season for Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame? It's tough to win these playoff games. You're playing all of the best programs. We're also spending $30 to $50 million on rosters. So, like, even if Notre Dame is really good, nothing's a given, right, in this era. What is considered a disappointing season for Marcus Freeman?
I think a quarterfinals loss is. I mean, Oregon fans are disappointed by that 2 years ago, right? The Ohio State game, that's what it is. But if that's in the semi, I mean, Notre Dame, Texas, Oregon, Indiana, Miami, Ohio State, if one of those teams loses to the other in the semifinal, a rational college football fan can't find it disappointing. You can be disappointed. If you get murdered, maybe you're disappointed. It's a disappointment. But I think anyone getting to the semifinal, I can't believe how close the top seven are. I will be wrong here somewhere along the way, but I just don't think anyone below them is. You know, so obviously it's going to be proven wrong somewhere along the way. But semifinals, Notre Dame fans, I think, would probably say championship game or bust. You know, if you're in the championship game, a lot of things can happen. I would not have thought Miami would have made that run they did last year. And they played IU great in that game. Rational fan, semifinal, irrational fan. I don't know. You know, I do think Notre Dame, with really only having 3 losable regular season games, you can't lose 2 of those. That would be insanely bad for them. I don't think they'd make the playoffs, actually.
Yeah.
And nowadays, of course, if they do go 12-0, they will have a bye. I think if they go 11-1, they're probably hosting a home game. You definitely cannot lose a home playoff game in December if you're Notre Dame.
I always love the championship game title or bust thing. Like, we got that out here with Lanning, and I'm like, a bust what? Are you going to fire Dan Lanning? No. Yeah. So, like, he'll be back next year. I'd imagine.
He's the safest human being in the world, but there's no bust.
Exactly. Tim O'Malley does a great job covering Notre Dame. He's a good friend of the program. Anytime we need Notre Dame perspective, Irish Illustrated joining us here. Notre Dame number one in the preseason top 12 dirty poll, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson. Tim, thanks for the time. Enjoy Lambeau Field and the game against Wisconsin, and we'll catch up with you as the season rolls on.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks. Good luck to Oregon.
Yep, there we go. Tim O'Malley, he'd do the same thing Dirt did. He ain't putting his team number one. He's going to put Ohio State number one and put his team comfortably number two and play the no one's given us a chance card, which is ridiculous and stupid.
Two curses that will always exist in my mind, being ranked number one preseason in the Sports Illustrated College Football magazine. You never wanted to be number one in Sports Illustrated. And the other curse that exists is when you rank your team number one. Don't do it. You don't step on that crack. You're going to break your mama's back.
Yeah, we'll get into a lot in the third and fourth hour of the program. It's a Sprague Line Friday, so get those Sprague Line sponsors in at 503-864 6326. It's our final preseason week of Sprague in the Line. It's
the last tune-up.
Picks.
We got one more tune-up week here.
And then we'll keep track of everything. But let's start into Oregon. Oregon's taking on Boise State. Let's talk Oregon-Boise State next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We got a lot to get to, man. Stop farting around today.
Quit playing around. It's football season, damn it.
As big Tom Callahan would say, quit playing with your dinghy. As we get ready, college football is here. The NFL is just a couple days away. The Niners were roaming Melbourne, Australia yesterday. That was cool.
They see any kangaroos?
No, but they went to a rugby match.
That's pretty badass.
That flight's got to be terrible. 18 hours from California to
I've just kind of wiped Australia off of my big board. Too many things that could kill you in too long of a flight.
It's the flight for me. You know,
until you see an Australian snake on the sidewalk.
I'm not going into the
I don't think you need outback. To go into the outback to see snakes
in
Australia.
You're not going for a walkabout?
You're not going for a walkabout in the neighborhood?
No, I'm pretty much hanging in the big cities.
Sydney, Melbourne,
yeah.
Call it good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many snakes are in Sydney? I'm not going to Google that.
Please
I'm
don't
out.
Google
they
it.
They got scorpions over there. I don't even know if they do. There's things that can kill you, dude. They got big spiders. I'm out.
Great white sharks.
Yeah.
They're making a Steve Irwin doc because it's 20 years actually since he died. Which is kind of nuts to say that out loud.
That is weird.
And the camera guy that was with him when he died, there's a routine stingray filming thing.
Yeah.
He said when the water cleared, the stingray swam away and he filmed the stingray. When he came back, Irwin was indicating, let's go up, go up, go up. He's bleeding. And the camera guy brought him in the boat and he said, Irwin went, he punctured me lung. I'm dying. Like, he just straight up was just like, I'm dying.
Knew it was happening.
He knew it was over.
That's wild.
Crazy.
I'm now seeing a Reddit post from somebody in Sydney talking about, anybody else having problems with these brown snakes right now? They're all over my house.
College football coverage on The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi. One price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that.
If I'm going that far, I think I'd rather go to New Zealand.
I would rather go to New Zealand than Australia, yes.
Like, if that's the flight I'm taking, just send me to go be a hobbit for a while.
Well, yeah, you're a Lord of the Rings nerd.
I just think New Zealand's prettier, too, but I also have no basis.
How can you say that you've never been to either?
I have no basis.
Interesting. Oregon's kicking off their season. We have 8 a.m. pregame coverage on The
yes,
Fan.
Yes, we do.
Always right. Be tuned in for that one because Dirt has to wake up buck crack of dawn to get down to Eugene and Anthony Newman. And two, Dirt holds like 20 facts and stats that he doesn't share all week.
Exactly.
Until he gets to the pregame. And he goes, you know, fun fact, Anthony, that I discovered on Wednesday?
We just get little, you know, appetizers.
Just getting crumbs, dude. You're just getting crumbs. It's not a game day yet. I'm not in a game day mood yet. You got to put me in my game day mindset in order to get the best out of me.
You give me like the most random advance. Have you seen the Sean Taylor stat? And it's how they track safety movements per every 2 minutes and a quarter.
If I had that, that'd be pretty cool.
Coy Parrish actually was number three in the last 5 years of that stat.
Actually, the only thing I remember...
Like, where do you get this crap from? Yeah. And
where was that
all
in the fridge,
week?
In the cafe?
All week?
I would have put that on the menu.
The only thing I remember from Coy Parrish last year was him getting crossed up in the open field by Jordan Davison as Oregon ran Minnesota off the field. So hopefully that doesn't happen to him again, because that was not a great highlight.
Looking forward to the kick, 12:30... on CBS, Boise State, Oregon. It's going to be a delightful little back-to-back with Oregon State and then Oregon for my television viewing.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are. It's game day. It's a big season. We love to joke a lot on the show about the whole rat poison and no one's giving you a chance. We know what's on the line for Oregon this year, and that is a title or bust type of mentality, even if we can laugh at the bust part of that.
Yeah, it's not a bust, but it will be a disappointment if they come up short, just like it is every other year.
Oregon's certainly not Illinois, certainly not Rutgers.
No.
I'm just curious the expectations of how do you expect Oregon to start the game in the first game of the season.
I mean, I think when you consider the amount of guys who were back from last year's team, the continuity that you continued in your coaching staff, this does not have slow start written all over it. Guys came back for this reason, and now the season begins. Let's go. You're not breaking in a new quarterback. You're not breaking in an entirely new defensive line. It's not all new wide receivers who have never played in a game with your quarterback.
Let's go, McDermott!
Like it's time to go. There's no slow start here. Boise State's a hell of a program, historically speaking. I think it helps tremendously for Lanning to have the game from 2 years ago to point to, one, that they ran the ball for 200 yards on your ass. And a lot of guys on that D-line were playing for Oregon then or playing for Oregon now. Mateo was a starter that year. Tatum Tuioti was a starter that year.
Yeah.
Amari Washington was a key role player that year. So, like, those are three guys who play big snaps on the defensive line. And Ashton Gentry ran it down your throat for a couple of huge chunk runs. And so you have that teach moment to use and say, look, if we don't take these guys seriously, they can come in here and have a chance to knock us off. I think there are some teams where you excuse a slow start because there's a lot of fresh faces. The only new thing, I get that there's some new starters on the offensive line. All those guys have played. Like Fox Crater slotting into the starting left tackle. He started at left tackle in one of your biggest games last year. Tommy Tofi might be a little bit different. He's a true freshman. He's never played a game before, but I'm willing to lean on what I've heard from him out of spring ball since he arrived on campus, and that's that he's elite. The coordinator play calling thing, certainly a unique angle, but you also have both guys who have called plays before, one at Rutgers and one at Tulane. So you got guys with experience there. This to me is not a slow start candidate. It is a let's let our defensive line dominate, and that's really the only key to the game in terms of Oregon covering the spread, because when I look at Boise, the strength of their football team is probably their two running backs. Like, they have a great stable of backs over the years.
You just always kind of assume it anyway,
assume,
if you don't
right?
research it.
I mean, it's two guys who are coming back who were both really good players last year. They got to show that they can stay healthy throughout the course of the season. They've changed their numbers up a little bit so it'll look different for Boise State fans. But that's kind of the start and the end of their offense. Maddox Madsen? What do you
say? The quarterback?
Yeah. He doesn't terrify me. His numbers are fine. He's not a guy who's going to take over a game.
He benefits when the run game's going. We saw that a couple years ago when they were there.
He was 18 touchdowns, 9 picks last year, completed 58% of his passes. Like, he's just, he's okay. So he might be a little bit better this year. There's nothing about their pass attack that scares me. You have a defensive line that has been the talk of college football all offseason. Go dominate Boise State tomorrow.
We'll have more on this. Let's get into it in the third hour of the program, a little bit more on Oregon State. We can touch on the Apple Cup as well. Washington State is a fun one on Sunday, as we got a rivalry game to kick things off for both those programs. We'll dive maybe into a little bit of college football and get those Sprague & Line sponsors in at 503-864-6326. We got some Sprague & Line stuff to do as the last preseason Sprague & Line for us with college picks today. Loaded third hour and fourth hour. Dirt and Sprague back with more college football talk, Ducks, Beavs, etc. on 105.1 The Fan.